Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, we'll introduce you to Father John Phelps, the founder of Life Directions. He's made it his life's work to help others. The Rocket Classic is a month away, and we'll check in with Detroit golfer Joe Hooks, who will be playing in that big event. Jared Fleischer, Bedrock CEO, will stop by to talk about the Gratiot Life Sciences Building, a transformational facility coming to Detroit. And Mark Reith, Atwater Brewery and Velvet Peanut Butter owner, will check in to talk about his Rivertown businesses. A great show about what's happening in and around the D right after these messages. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit, and we now say hello to Father John Phelps. He is the president and CEO of Life Directions. This is a nonprofit that he started in 1973 with four other concerned Detroit citizens. Father, welcome to Opportunity Detroit.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity.
Will you tell our listeners exactly how you got this started and why in 1973, Father John Phelps?
Good. I started in Southwest Detroit, and I was sent here to try to get to the cause of violence among young people. It was the murder capital of the time, and every 18 hours, someone was being killed under 21. And so I found that one of the dynamics that would happen is that if I get to the dropout from public high schools, that would be a real way to get to the cause. And it took some time. I went into the public schools, and I started basically with four other young adults, a married couple, another minister like myself from Northwest Detroit, and a sister, Rosalie Ascara. And the five of us set out to get to the cause of dropouts, the violence, and all the different activities that flow from that, and gangs and everything else. And so it became wonderful. That's how we got started.
Oh, that's so interesting. What was the reaction when you first started doing this from these kids in the community?
Well, when I went into the first public school, the principal thought I was lost and should go back to a Catholic parish at Holy Redeemer. And the other principal wondered if I really should belong in a public school. So it was really a hiccup at the beginning. But when the counselors got to know me and we got to work together, it became really wonderful. The young people started to say, "Why are you here? Just to listen. What do you want to listen to? Your story." And they started to tell me stories, and it became interesting because once I got into their storytelling, once they started to share with each other, once those who were making the school work for them and the other ones had a struggle to do that, joined together, the peers began to inspire peers, and all of a sudden, the turnaround rate was unbelievable, and the principal started to say, "Wow, this really works." And I didn't bring anything about faith formation. I brought everything about hope. We wanted to have hope in the public schools and hope in the future of young people's lives, and that's what got it really inspired.
Father, in hearing their stories, what are some of their issues? Why did they get so lost or have so many issues?
Well, They're in a reactive world, and things react. And they play sports, and sports tend to be organized competition. Mm-hmm. But when they don't have any organizational structure, when they're dropping out and they're not connecting with the system as it's running right now in the schools or the parishes or whatever is happening, they begin to fill in the gap with gangs. And they organize each other, and rather than gangs for good, they become gangs for bad. And so the issues they have to face, I'll give you an example. A young lady, she had been in jail six times by 16 years old, and she was thinking that that's the way of life because that was her family and that was her parish and that was her community that she was working with. And so as she was moving that way, all of a sudden one of her aunts connected with our program and sent her to us in the school. And then she started to learn from her peers that other people don't go to jail, that maybe there's other ways to doing it. But she was meeting with people she usually wouldn't meet with. And then eventually she really turned around, and she became amazing. And what she said about herself was, "The problem I really had was I didn't know I had a problem." But now she's a mother. She has three children. They're finishing college. She started her career. She's in development in Southwest Detroit. So it's a wonderful success story that could have gone the other way.
Oh, it's an amazing success story. You know, Father, as we watch these gangs over the years, we have learned that in an odd sort of way, gangs give these young people, these kids, a sense of community, not the right sense of community, but a sense of community. Is that something that you've noticed in your work all these years?
Absolutely. It's something like a union that they form together. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a work-related activity. Of course, the work is criminal, and so therefore the activity is not acceptable in our society. But that acceptance, and that's what we want to prevent. Prevention of all of that activity stops it before it starts. If we can stop it before it starts, we've changed a whole population of people, and all of a sudden the young people who are using gangs for bad all of a sudden find partnerships and relationships and intergenerational parents, adults, their teachers, the system itself. Everybody starts to work together for good, and when things are going well, that's the power of their own discovery of what they can do with their lives when they see possibilities.
Absolutely. It's my understanding that Life Directions is a prevention program. Tell our listeners how this works. What does this involve?
We begin in the public school.
Okay.
We ask teachers to give us one young person who will listen to them, which means they're rooted in their values with their family and especially their grandparents, and two of them who are turning the teacher off for whatever reason. Put them together as groups of three, have 15 of them together. We do dramas, role plays, all the issues that they face currently with all their technology and everything else that they communicate with. And the young people start to empower each other to discover possibilities for all the problems that they have, opportunities they could face that could come out of their obstacles. And by being together, they can actually take charge of their lives and begin to build their future. And they start to think they can dream. And we ask them to think, what are you going to be 20 years from now? So we asked Manny to do that. And when we asked him to do that, he started to think about what he wanted to do with his career. Mm. And now he's a manager of a restaurant. And at 13, he was barely making it through school. So this is amazing to see that 20 years later, he actually is living his dream. But we started by having people begin to have a dream about what they want to do. And we asked them also, do you have a dream for your children? What do you want for your children? And that really turns them around.
Speaking of living the dream, some of these young people have gone on to some pretty fabulous schools. Talk about that. Colleges.
Yes, the University of Detroit. We have a graduate from nursing, University of Michigan, someone in science, DePaul University, Harvard University. We have people that have gone into their careers, but the universities and careers together have really shown a lot of avenues, and a lot of young people go that way.
In the 52-plus years that you have done this, how many people do you think you have impacted? How many young lives do you think you've changed, Father John Phelps?
Well, remember, it's a team of five, and it's all the people who support us, our boards and our staff. But together, as a whole team called Life Directions, we have impacted the youth and their families up to about 180,000 people in six different states.
Wow, that's incredible. And do you think a big part of this is just letting people know that you care and that their life is important and that they can make a difference in the world? What is it?
Yes. It's a lot. When you find your spark is needed for someone else. And when you develop your spark and someone else needs it, and you begin to be appreciated and valued, and someone says thank you for what you're doing, and they're grateful for you investing in their future by going to school and getting ready, and you begin to put those dots together, then you see your neighborhood, that you can support your neighborhood and go into your community, and you can clean up the situations there. We can partner with other community-based organizations, and they begin to see that they have all these opportunities before them. And once they see their path to opportunities that relate to their core values, what they really want to do with their life, be it sports or music or education or whatever they want to do, when they can really take that track, then they become a real gift to our community.
Father John Phelps, President and CEO of Life Directions and the co-founder, you're doing incredible work, and we applaud you, and we thank you for your time today.
You're welcome, and thank you, Ann. Appreciate it.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, a great conversation with Detroit golfer Joe Hooks. You are are listening to Opportunity Detroit. I have known our next guest since he was in middle school, playing in the junior golf program at Detroit Golf Club. His name is Joe Hooks. He's still playing golf, and this year he will play on Detroit's biggest golf stage, the Rocket Classic. Joe, welcome into the show.
Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm just great, Joe. I am very excited to be talking to you because I watched you play when you were much younger, and I knew back then that you eventually would get to where you are today. So this is a lot of fun to talk to you. Talk about this Rocket Classic exemption. How exciting is this?
You know, it's such a blessing and just an incredible opportunity, incredible moment to be really to just be recognized in such a fashion to where they, you know, wanted to give me an exemption. And you know, obviously, I definitely have put in a lot of work over the years to earn it, but it's just such an unreal opportunity, and, you know, especially to be able to prep for it with so much time, prep for the tournament. You know, it's just unbelievable.
Tell our listeners a little bit about you. I know about you. I know you grew up in this area. I know you went to UAD High. But tell our listeners, give us a little background on Joe Hooks.
I'm an only child, and my parents were they owned a couple supermarkets when we were younger, and they were very blue collar hard workers, and it rubbed off on me because I did work at the store growing up as well, but, like, you know, I also, like, my dad dropped me off at the course every day, and I would practice all day, every day, and I didn't know anything else, you know? And so that kind of blue-collar attitude definitely is a part of my DNA and how I go about my career, you know, on the golf course. It's just my parents are the reason why I am where I am today. They're definitely a part of it.
How old were you, Joe Hooks, when you thought to yourself, I want to be a golfer?
I was probably 14 or 15 when I decided that I wanted to play professionally. And that was because of a class I had at U of D. We had a morality class, and a part of that morality class was spent on us learning about vocation. And at that point in my life, I realized that the access I had was a blessing, and the access is why I was as good of a player as I was at such a young age. So, like, what can I do to inspire others down the line to, you know, play such an incredible game by chance, you know, just, or at least just to be interested in it. And so I just felt like golf was my calling one way or another. And that was when I made that decision that I'm playing professional golf one way or another.
On the line. I love it. What is it about golf that is so special to you, Joe?
I think it's the great connector. It's one of my opinion, one of the only things in the world that kind of can bring people of such different viewpoints together, and they can have such a common love for one thing that, you know, causes us so much stress and so much joy, you know, like, and there's nothing like it in the world, in my opinion. You know, like the numbers I have on my phone are, you know, of people that have, you know, different upbringings, world views and different beliefs, but like the one, this game, this sport is just like it's just a connecting and unifying experience, if that makes sense.
Oh, I think it makes total sense. I think a lot of people would agree with you, Joe Hooks. After UAD Jesuit, you went on to Wayne State. Tell us a little bit about your experience there.
Yeah, Wayne State was the best thing about Wayne State for me was being in the city during the, you know, the start of the revitalization kind of era.
Yeah.
You know, I witnessed slowly kind of like the start of what the city has become now and what Midtown is now. And I just saw buildings tore down and built back up, you know, saw Little Caesars for years, like that corner of Woodward and 75, like just be empty and kind of like the groundbreaking and all that, just being in the city for, you know, those 5 years was, you know, just, it's just like, it really, really, really gave me even more pride about where I'm from.
I love that. So you turned pro in 2017. What does that mean for, you know, people out there that may not be into golf or don't know how that works? What happens when you turn pro, Joe?
Yeah, so basically, technically it's like just, oh, you've entered your first tournament as a professional, meaning like you're going to accept the check. The process is definitely like a little complicated as it pertains to having the money to play in tournaments, you know, like getting sponsors and all that. You know, I had my late Uncle Doc definitely was a big supporter of me, like on the financial side when I first turned pro. He was helping me pay for some tournaments. And even though I was working at a golf course in Florida, he was helping me like with some expenses early on, and that allowed me to just get my feet wet. But if you don't have any support, then, you know, yeah, you can be saying, oh, yeah, I'm playing professionally, but if you're not playing tournaments, you know, it's, you know, how serious is that? You know.
Right. No, that's actually a very, very good point. It's a tough game. You got to play a lot, right? And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But last June, you won. You won the John Shippen at the Detroit Golf Club. Tell us how that felt, how that worked out.
Yeah, that was just full circle. No better full circle moment. Down the line, after I went on the PGA Tour, like, I still feel like I will look back at that win as, you know, probably one of the most important moments in my golf career ever, because of what I went through in 2023 with pretty much the only serious injury I've had that caused me to like miss time. Yeah. It happened during the shipping, during the first round, and I found myself on my knees on 13 green and practically crawling down 14 fairway. I had to withdraw because of the injury, and then I didn't get invited the following year. And so, you know, fast forward to 2025, I'm having like, you know, tough stretch as far as like just with some things in life, and just really have, you know, new things that I'm doing to manage the stress.
Yes.
And I went into Detroit in that, you know, that week, and was just like, everything was just clear mentally. Like, and it was my moment. It was my time to just capitalize, and I did. So it's just unbelievable to have that stage and have that opportunity, for one, and to be able to see it through in front of, you know, both of my parents. My mom wasn't working that week, which was so nice. And so it's just no better moment than that. Like,
no, you're absolutely
right. So now this year we got to, you know, see how special we can be at Rocket.
Well, I have a feeling, Joe Hooks, you're going to be very special. I hear in what you're talking about some lessons learned in life. What would you say to young golfers out there who really want to be a part of this sport, knowing that there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, Joe?
That's a good question. I would remind them to stay the course and just like enjoy the process of life, right? Enjoy putting in the work. You know, it sounds like, why would I want it? How can I enjoy work, though? No, just enjoy being able. Like, look at life as something that you get to do, and look at the challenges as something that you get to go through. You know. Yeah. You get to do it. It's not something that's happening to you. Like, you get to overcome. I get an opportunity to overcome this challenge, you know?
Sure. Right. No, that's good advice. What are some of the techniques that you have learned in your career for stress management? Because that's a thing for golfers. It's a thing for all of us. But I know that it can kind of get to people that are competing basically in any sport, Joe Hooks.
Yes. The biggest one most recently, or over the last year and some change, has been breath work for me.
Okay. Well, I am really looking forward, Joe Hooks, to watching you play at the Rocket Classic this year. I think it's going to be fantastic, and I appreciate your time today. It was really nice talking to you.
I appreciate you, Sam. Thank you.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, a transformational facility coming to the city. We'll tell you all about it. Thanks for checking out Opportunity Detroit today. We now welcome Jared Fleischer, Bedrock CEO, into the show. Jared, thanks for your time today.
It's great to be on with you.
Jared, I want to start this conversation by talking, first of all, a little bit about the Gratiot Life Sciences building. You just did the groundbreaking. Tell us about this project. It sounds so cool.
It really is very exciting for the city, exciting for, you know, all the patients that are going to get, you know, world-class care there. But I think, you know, to truly tell the story of the Gratiot Life Sciences building, you have to tell the story of the Gratiot site. And this is the infamous failed jail site, right? This is where, when we got into the picture, there was a quarter-built jail with not enough money to finish it. And for folks who may not know all the sites in downtown Detroit, you know, this is right off of 375, you know, the gateway into the city by Ford Field and the theater district. And we had a quarter built jail there. And Dan said, not only is this, you know, eyesore, you know, and kind of a symbol of not so much competence, you know, a terrible thing for our city, but we shouldn't even have a completed jail here at this gateway to, you know, the core of our city. So Dan Gilbert being an incredible visionary and somebody who's more committed to this than you could ever imagine, said, I'm going to underwrite the construction of a new jail up, you know, 375 and Warren, where the money that the county has, you know, I'll come up with the rest to build and then turn over to the county, you know, a brand new jail, you know, state of the art. And then we're going to turn the Gratiot site into a proper gateway for the city of Detroit. And we could not be more excited than, you know, how that is starting to come together, with the first big move being the Gratiot Life Sciences building. And the anchor tenant there being a partnership between Henry Ford Health and Banff. And what they will offer there is some of the most advanced, cancer treatment in the country, in the world. And we can get into it if you want, but leveraging, you know, a new way of diagnosing and delivering treatment for cancer at the most precise level possible. So you're not having the, you know, terrible effects of chemotherapy on your whole body. This delivers the treatment right to the at the molecular level, and you know, is more effective and less dramatically fewer side effects in curing cancer, starting with prostate cancer and going on from there.
Well, Jared, it's going to be the region's first ever comprehensive theranostic center. And I've heard the term medical tourism thrown around here, because this is so unique and this is going to be such a beautiful facility. And what's being done there is so cool. I get why we're hearing this term medical tourism.
Yeah, you know, I have to give all the credit in the world to Banff and to Henry Ford. You know,
sure,
we're thrilled to, we're building them the building, and we made the site possible, but it's really, you know, it's the Banff folks who have really advanced this technology to use radiopharmaceuticals to, at the molecular level, identify cancer cells and target treatment right to the cancer cells. But you're right, this is a cutting-edge treatment that is not available in a lot of places. Because of Banff, it's really, Michigan is kind of becoming the epicenter for it. And you're absolutely right. People, you know, they travel for the best healthcare in the world, especially when, you know, their lives are on the line. And it's great that people are able to get that level of care. And it's great for our economy and job creation and spillover effects for folks from all over the state and country and world to be coming to Detroit for the best treatment in the world.
Well, and I think, Jared, it's important and profound that Bedrock is involved in it. Bedrock founded in 2011 as a property management company, and wow, your company has become that and so much more. Talk a little bit about how Bedrock has advanced and what you're doing now in the city of Detroit. Very, very impressive.
Yeah, Bedrock is really 100% the product of Dan Gilbert's vision. It was created in 2010 when Dan moved Quicken Loans from outside of Detroit to downtown Detroit. Dan believed that for then Quicken, now Rocket, to grow into a great national company, it needed to be able to attract the best talent, and that particularly young talent wanted to be in a vibrant urban environment. Dan was tired of losing all of our best talent to Chicago and to the coast.
Yes.
So moved Quicken downtown, formed Bedrock really as kind of the informal real estate arm to help make all that possible. And then the true story of it is it really evolved organically from Bedrock becoming, you know, let's buy and fix up and fill buildings to house this, you know, growing mortgage company to really becoming, you know, Dan's, frankly, his life's work. You know, I think the thing that he is most passionate about in life, other than his family and maybe the Cavaliers, which is, you know, rebuilding this great American city. And when Dan moved down here, we were 2 years out from bankruptcy and kind of at the lowest point in history after the housing crisis and financial crisis. And here we are 15 years later, 16 years. And, you know, New York Times, USA Today, Time Magazine, Travel and Leisure, Wall Street Journal, they're all saying Detroit's the top 50 place to visit in the world. That's an extraordinary comeback. And, you know, it takes a village, but I think there's no question that, you know, Dan's been leading that charge. And we're not done yet either.
Well, speaking of that, Jared Fleischer, Bedrock CEO, you're not done yet. You've kind of completed phase one. Tell us a little bit about what's coming next, phase two.
Yeah, so phase one is when Dan came down here, really our investments have been concentrated on the north-south axis, really along Woodward and kind of a little bit off of Woodward, but the north-south axis of the city, everybody knows Woodward Avenue. And kind of phase two is we'd really like to double down on everything that we've done. To date, you know, billions of dollars in investments, you know, tens of millions of square feet of property brought back to life and filled. We'd like to double down on that on the east-west axis and take our incredible international riverfront and the best river walk in the country. But there's no development on the riverfront. There's no commerce. You think about the best riverfronts from our waterfronts from you know, Navy Pier to Chelsea Pier to Fisherman's Wharf in San Francisco. You have all these riverfronts, waterfronts that are the most important economic and tourism assets for the city. We have that potential here, but we have just 30 acres of surface parking lots next to the Renaissance Center and a dying, obsolete Renaissance Center. Our vision is to take that dying Renaissance Center, rejuvenate it for the next 50, 100 years, take the empty land next to it, build the best waterfront district in the country, double down on everything we've done. And when the story is over after phase one and phase two, you know, we'll have a core of our city, an urban core that matches any great city in this country.
I believe you will, Jared Fleischer. Can you kind of paint a picture of what your vision is for that area? Are we talking about, you know, more hotels, restaurants? What do you see for this? It's just such a great idea.
Yeah, we want it to be a destination.
Yes.
We want it to be something that attracts millions and millions of people every year.
Jared Fleischer, Bedrock CEO, you're doing a great job making Detroit a wonderful place to live, work, and play. And we appreciate your time today, too.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, you'll meet Mark Reith. He owns several interesting businesses right here in the city. Are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Detroit entrepreneur Mark Reith has reacquired Atwater Brewery, and it's a full circle moment for this local businessman who is with us now to talk about it. Mark, welcome to Opportunity Detroit.
That's so great to be here. Looking forward to our discussion.
Well, tell us about this. What is going on?
That's great. So basically, you know, when I sold the company in 2020. I stayed around for a year and a half, and then I exited out in mid-2021. And then from there, kind of said, all right, what's the next chapter look like? And as a serial entrepreneur, dove into a couple of different opportunities because I can only play so much bad golf, right? That's the way I look at it. So, but the Atwater then was sold again from I sold it to Molson Coors, and they sold the business in 2023 to Tilray Inc. And at that point, Tilray took it over along with many other beverage companies over a 2-year span of time. And basically, what I did is I said, if I ever had an opportunity to buy the business back, I would absolutely look at it, and reached out, and it seemed to be the right time for them as well as myself. You know, I still own the real estate in Rivertown. And so we had a discussion for about 2.5-3 months came to an agreement, and here we are.
So, Mark, you owned the business for 15 years. Why did you decide, you know what, I want to give this another go? What was the reasoning behind the decision?
Well, I think a lot of it really has to do with my passion for Detroit beer, Detroit-owned businesses, the community, and giving back. That's part of it. The other one are the employees that are there that are new, and the employees that are still there when I sold the company. And I just saw such a great opportunity for the brand. The brand deserves more than it was getting, and it just seemed like the right opportunity to take the business over, grab the real estate back. I'm able to move my other businesses back into the offices there, and really just dive deeper again into Detroit out into Michigan, and as our slogan says, brewed in Detroit, raised everywhere.
Take us back to 2005 when you first operated Atwater Brewery, owner, operator. How did you get into the beer business in the first place?
Well, I loved beer, so that was number one.
I love it.
That started in the earlier in the college years, but when I moved back to Detroit in 1997, and I had a passion at that point, I said, I really wanted to start a business in Detroit, be part of the Renaissance. And that was the year that Atwater actually opened originally. So I was a patron, I was a home brewer, and just said, you know, if I ever had an opportunity, I'd love to have a beer business. And just over the years, started talking to the owners at that time and invested in 2002 and then bought it out in 2005.
So Atwater Brewery is an award-winning company. Tell our listeners what kind of beer can be found at Atwater Brewery.
Well, Atwater was founded originally on the traditional German-style lagers, which is the heritage of the brand. All the equipment was brought in from Germany. The original brewmaster came in and stayed for 2 years, developed all the recipes, very unique. That's where all the awards came from. International awards came from. And then what happened from there is that, as drinking habits changed within the beer industry, and craft beer really started becoming more popular, we decided to look into other flavor profiles that maybe consumers wanted. And the big one that came up was Dirty Blonde. Mm-hmm. And that became, you know, probably 65% of our overall sales.
Oh, wow.
In one brand. And then from there, we have a gamut of great products from a great American IPA to a hazy IPA to our great pilsners and lagers and our vanilla Java Porter, which is also another staple of ours.
Now, I know you don't want to give away any secrets, but what are some of the big plans that you have for Atwater Brewery moving forward, Mark Reith?
World domination.
I love it. How do you do that, though, Mark? How do you go about doing that?
Well, you do it one pint at a time. That's what you start with. So, no, I think what we really want to do is reestablish, you know, Detroit's brewery, Atwater, and build it from Detroit out again. That's how I did it years back. And just really dive deep into the community with the retailers, our distributors, all of our partners out there, and just make sure that everybody understands that, look, we're locally owned. We're locally supported. We support our communities. And we're going to do some really cool stuff in Rivertown. I'm excited about that. And then we're going to rebuild the brand and bring it back out. It still does very well in the marketplace. We just want to make sure that we continue that momentum and bring it back locally owned. And then also do a bunch of innovation. The beverage world is ever changing, and we're going to be a part of that innovation, and we're really excited about that part, too.
You also own Velvet Peanut Butter. That's a big name in Detroit. Talk about that. You bought that in 2025, Mark?
Yeah, I bought it in January of 25, and it was just an opportunity that came about, and, you know, I ate it growing up. You know, you got the Fresh, Pure, and Delicious boys on the label, and I have two brothers, so there's three of us, which was kind of cool, and you have a 90-year-old iconic brand. It's very hard to establish brands. We already have an established one, and now we're just bringing that back out, not only across Michigan, but across the country over the next year or two.
And is all of this being done at Rivertown? And what are some of the changes that we're going to see at Rivertown?
Well, what we want to do is, obviously, we have a great tap house for customers to come in and experience Atwater and all the great beverages and food in our tap house. But we're also going to put in a Velvet House, which is going to be kind of cool and unique. And people can come in and buy peanut butter and buy all of our merchandise and all the things that we're going to do with the Velvet House, which is going to be really cool as well.
It sounds like you might be able to provide some tours for people.
Absolutely. That's a big part of it.
Oh, that's great. You know, you're part of Detroit's renaissance. Talk a little bit about how that feels.
Well, it's great. I mean, I always talked about, you know, when in 08 and 09 and the bankruptcy and Detroit's tough, we're resilient. And look, we went through some hard times, mm-hmm. and it was tough. And then you had the pandemic and all those things. But at the end of the day, you just keep going.
Mark Reith, the owner operator of Atwater Brewery and also of Velvet Peanut Butter, thank you for your time today and all the best on these projects.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
And I'm Ann Thomas. Thanks for listening to Opportunity Detroit, and enjoy the rest of your day.